I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
You're currently listening to the free version of Let Me Talk.
If you want longer, ad-free episodes, even earlier, head to lmtpod.com to find out how to subscribe.
Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk!
Let me talk!
One, two!
Remember when I said you don't have to be good if you're lucky? Well, United were neither good nor lucky, so it was a comprehensive win in the derby, even if nerves, mine included, were a bit shredded at half-time. But all's well that ends well. This is Let Me Talk. I'm David Mooney. With me is the Athletic City correspondent, Sam Lee. Hello, Sam.
All right. Hello.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad, thanks. Good derby day in the end.
Yeah. If Haaland had scored that one before half-time... Look, to be fair, so we're recording this fairly soon after the game. I'm not massively up to date on how it's been taken, other than obviously City got a good win. But I feel like if Haaland had have scored before half time, it would have been more renowned as another, you know, really kind of embarrassing derby defeat for United. But because there was an extra 15 minutes at half time for everyone to dwell on, oh, what's going on? Like, are City gonna do this, or what's gonna happen with the counter attacks? It felt a bit less emphatic than it actually was.
Yeah, it was. It was comfortable.
But to be fair, there were times it was comfortable. And if you, like at half time, I was like, well, City did everything but score a goal. I didn't feel any reason to go, oh, what's going on with City? Like, what are they doing wrong? Like, I thought they were really good. Even the counter attack kind of dried up after about 25 minutes. And admittedly, there were a few early on. But yeah, I feel like if that equaliser had come a bit sooner, it would have just felt like, you know, half-time would have been, okay, they've got themselves back in it. The win is surely going to come. But there was a bit of extra doubt for an extra 20 minutes or so, including half-time. But, yeah, like I say, if you look at the numbers, that tweet you sent me not long ago saying City had more shots than United had possession, which is something I've never heard before. It sounds like a spoken typo. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
But no, it happened. I think that's probably the best out to sum it up.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, though, Sam, like part of me wishes it had been a bit more comfortable and that City had taken control of the game and scoreline wise, not performance wise. They had control of it from pretty much all the way through. But in terms of the score, I kind of wish they'd scored earlier, got themselves in front and kind of cruised all the way through and absolutely handed out a battering. But at the same time, part of me also wonders, you know, did they leave it late enough for all those Liverpool fans who were crowing yesterday to kind of get a little bit of a taste of the hope and then the despair afterwards?
Yeah. I've thought about that. I presume so. Yeah, because the thing is, I'm sure there would have been an even greater sense of inevitability that City were going to do it. But yeah, I mean, you know, talking about the reception to it and in the end it was really one-sided. I do remember... Everyone said to me, I did Five Live afterwards and I got a lift home with a colleague. And they both said, you know, Foden's first goal came at a good time. And it felt like it was kind of drifting a little bit. And then I do remember thinking, after Guardiola made the sub, Alvarez on for Doku and, you know, Bernardo on the left, I remember thinking for a while, I'm not really sure this has changed anything for the better. So maybe it's obviously easier for me to say even that, It was so one-sided, and it was like, you know, the 6-3s or the 4-2s or whatever. But yeah, I'm sure Liverpool might have had a bit of hope that City might not get it. But obviously it's not. Fuck, it's certainly not as late as they left it, unfortunately. But yeah, I'm sure they might have started to think this is possible, especially when he got to half time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, after Foden scores 11 minutes into the second half, and then it takes as long as it takes. I mean, I'm sure maybe when it went to 8 minutes, they thought United might have hit on the break as well. But they duly crapped the bed and allowed City a very comfortable finish by just whatever they were trying to do, get Amrabat on to make a fool of himself and then wheel him back off again. Like, I don't know what they were doing with that. But yeah, all's well that ends well, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Let's turn to some correspondence, Sam, because Max got in touch ahead of the game. I think it was on Friday or Saturday that he got in touch and said, there's always so much discourse on Foden and where his best position is, how his career is shaping out, and sometimes unnecessary scrutiny on how and where he's playing. My question is, do you think he's overlooked as a winger? It seems when he plays out wide, he can beat his man for fun, cut in, score, assist, hold up play, tuck into midfield, track back in defence, and people will just say he's playing out of position and massively discredit how good a wide player he actually is. The guy can score a hat-trick from wide and he's not being properly utilised. I agree that I prefer him through the middle, but at what point are people intentionally disregarding his brilliance as a winger? And then Max followed that up after today's game with, I've single-handedly manifested Foden's performance today.
Yeah, I saw the email before the game. Yeah, I don't feel like it's kind of purposely overlooking it. I just think it's something that people do. I also feel like we've talked about this, maybe on a detail show with Nadim, because I kind of remember Nadim thinking the same thing. Like, he's a good winger.
Mm.
Like we said before, he's best false nine, but he's a good winger. Yeah, there is always that question about playing through the middle, and obviously recently he's shown how good he can be there, but like, he has shown how good he can be on the wing as well. And like, to do everything he's done so far, you can hardly say it's been a waste. And, you know, maybe the next level is playing through the middle. But maybe the next level is playing wherever, like he's done today, and it doesn't matter how and where the goals come. Because I ended up getting the train up because I had a family engagement on Saturday, so I got the train up from the Midlands. And I was searching different stuff for an article I'm writing next week. And it was like a Guardian article from 3 years ago about Foden's finishing, and Guardiola was asked, you know, how many goals can he add if he sorts his composure out? And he was like, yeah, a lot. Like, sometimes his decision-making is a bit... And he tailed off. He didn't finish a sentence, but he was like... But, you know, he's young, so it's fine. And again, like, that composure, we talked about it recently, the hat-trick at Brentford in particular. It feels like it's coming in. But then the miss in the first half, he was getting some pelters after that. I say the miss, you know, Onana saved it, but it looked like it was going wide anyway. That was a big chance. The one against Brentford at home the other week when he tried to go around the keeper without the goalkeeper having been sat down beforehand. So that composure isn't fully there, and obviously the Champions League final. But then you got the combination of the absolute screamer that was the first goal and then him popping up on the other side and having the composure in that scenario to finish it.
It's funny, that second
it's a
goal...
player who he might not necessarily have to play through the middle
to
be the guy. Maybe he can be the guy wherever he is.
Yeah, that second goal, you know, is... You know, we were talking about on a details recently about in your mind's eye, what do you see when, like, for this or for that? That's a Foden goal in my mind's eye.
Okay.
Drilled across
the goal.
For me,
it's the kind of short corner, other side of the box, kind of where we scored the first one from.
Yeah.
But a bit closer to the corner flag and... lower near post.
Yeah, I see it drilled across the goal, across the goalkeeper into the far corner from the left-hand side.
For me, that's the Foden miss. because, no, he scored one, didn't he? He drilled one into the bottom corner of Anfield a couple of years ago. But, he's obviously missed a couple as well in a similar scenario. But, like, in the sense that composure is definitely coming on, it's not there yet. Like, how far, you know, what level is he going to end up at? You know, Guardiola was kind of... I think Guardiola said I think he was asked about, could he be one of the best players in the Premier League? And Guardiola, it sounded like he said he is already.
Well, we can hear what it
but
like
whether
he said,
he is, yeah, but whether he said he is the best player in the league or he is already one of the best, I'm not sure. But yeah, Guardiola's definitely, because there's so much, you'll hear over the course of the quotes, all the kind of ins and outs and the things that Guardiola has in mind when he's talking about Foden, but it's all kind of coming together.
Yeah. Well, let's put it off no longer. Let's hear what Guardiola said about Foden after the game.
Always had the feeling to score goals in the training sessions. Always had the feeling. But now it's winning games. So to become a world-class player at the age, you have to win games. and always play good, always have incredible work ethic. Doesn't matter the position, no complain. He lives to play football, but now he's winning games. He played a false nine in Bournemouth. It was unbelievable today. After he missed the first chance against Onana, he became a little bit anxious, and that is for the age. He will learn on that, but Rashford scored an unbelievable goal, and Phil scored an unbelievable goal too.
Are you surprised with the amount of responsibility he's been taking in matches?
But when he arrived with 70, 80, 90 years old, he had it. He lives for to play football. The thing is, the pressure Phil is, I don't know, is he has to make a conference talking about the last book he read. But not about football. So he loved it. So, and that's why he never, when 18, 19, 20 years old, when I started 20, he proved things. He was aggressive in the goal and dribbles. And I'm not more mature. Understand defensively what you have to do. Before was not really good. And understand the games, you know, better. And the most important thing, everybody had in this audience and all the fans today, when he got the ball close to the box, had the feeling that something is going to happen. A shoot, an assist, something is going to happen. Being effective or ineffective, that is not the question. Had the feeling that he's aggressive to try to score. That's why he has become a really important player for us and for national team from England.
Talent has always been there. Did you notice something different in his mindset?
It's more mature. When you play a lot of games, more mature, but especially he win games. Always score goals, because always have been that feeling. But now, score goals and winning games. And that, when you do this, you reach another level as a player.
There we go. It's funny, because when I sat down to think about the show tonight, Sam, and the question around Foden, like, I instantly wanted to say, sort of like, use the good old cliche, things like coming of age sort of performance, but he was already there. This feels like the way I've kind of labelled it is a don't you dare think about giving player of the season to anyone else performance.
Yeah. Definitely the way it's gone on. And again, like, yeah, not like a coming of age thing, but maybe a season, because he had the breakthrough season when he came through on the wing, and then, like I say, the season after, when he was false nine, he was great, but it wasn't as kind of standout great, where he was taking people on and scoring goals. It was more selfless, so we didn't get the applauds for it. And then obviously last season was last season. But now, after we talked about after the Newcastle game at the start of the season and a couple of games along the way, he's like standing up as the main man. And De Bruyne wasn't there at that level today. A bit like the Chelsea game, you know, he was trying to get the crosses in, but couldn't find anyone, couldn't get the passes in. But then Foden steps up and does it. So maybe this is the season where that starts. And again, just to go back to the previous answer, maybe he doesn't have to play in the middle. You know, it'd be great if he does, and there will be times. But if he's on the wing, like, I know people don't like it, but I personally don't feel like it's a question of him being wasted, because he's done great things from there. You know, if the whole point is he never plays down the middle, with all the goals that he's got at City and how well he's played over the years, then he's done it somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't care anymore.
So it's not an issue. I mean, again, it becomes an issue when it's, you know, we're talking about Alvarez and why is he playing down the middle, et cetera, et cetera. But we talked about that. It's because he's not as versatile and Foden is more versatile. So it's a bit more annoying if you want to see Foden down the middle. But today's obviously a good time to make the case. But if you've got somebody who can play on the wing like that, then why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't care anymore. Like I say, I think it's... I think when you look at what Foden does, I mean, take the Derby as an example. You know, he played on the left, he played on the right, he played in various different positions throughout the game, and at various points was drifting into the middle anyway. So it's kind of like we're at the stage now where, yeah, sure, he isn't starting on the team sheet when you write it down as one of the number eights or in a central position. But where he's playing, like, it's not restricted to, oh, he's being shoved out on the wing. It's not like we're not in the mid-90s here talking about 4-4-2 and nobody leaving their positions. We're talking about a Guardiola side where everybody moves around. And it gets to the point where people can talk about he should be playing through the middle, or he shouldn't be playing out wide, or he should be, you know, doing this or that. Like, it just is, and that's all I care about now.
Yeah, well, I mean, good luck going through all this in the summer on a national level. Because when I joined the conversation again on Five Live after the game, I joined mid-conversation, they were talking about where he should play for England. And it's like, well, again, I actually, when they asked me about it, I said, there's all this stuff about the middle, whether Guardiola thinks he can, whether Southgate thinks he can. The fact that Bellingham's going to be the more attacking of the three, and obviously you've got Rice, and then who's the other one? Probably wouldn't be Foden. But it doesn't matter, because he's just the obvious candidate to play on the left wing. Because people will be saying Saka should play, come what may. That conversation will be had between now and the end of the season when Saka does something brilliant. And obviously there's Kane. So it's just going to have to be Foden on the left wing, really. Because, you know, Grealish hasn't always been, well, hasn't really ever been England's main man, whether he should have been or not. And Rashford's not as good as Foden, certainly currently. So it seems simple in that sense, but there's going to be a hell of a clamour for all of those guys and how they all best fit together in the summer. But yeah, and the question was asked, I didn't get to answer it, but the question was asked, like, can he be as effective as he is for City when he plays for England? But I mean, the thing is, there's barely any team that's good enough or as good as City are, let alone England, let alone a national team of any standing. So the answer is no, but you just got to fit them together as best they can. But I mean, yeah, exactly. If he was playing on the right wing and coming inside, which has happened at Scotland away earlier this year, I remember, then great. But again, you've got a Saka issue. So everyone's going to be arguing in the summer about it. But fortunately for City, there's several different things he can do.
And he's doing them, yeah.
And he's doing them, and he's growing. And yeah, and anyone who said he should have, you know, gone on loan 4 or 5 years ago, show yourself now and go away.
Yeah, credit.
Because it was obvious. It was just obvious. Like, he was always going to get the chance.
Yeah, credit to Neil Custis, by the way, for never taking that tweet down. Because he could have done. And I mean, it must have had one hell of a muting down the years, just because of the number of times it does the rounds every time Foden plays well and the frequency at which Foden plays well.
I'm surprised I'm not seeing it today.
Yeah, it's done the rounds today. Yeah, I've seen it today.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah.
It's always nice.
I'll be disappointed if not.
Yeah,
so fair play.
Yeah. Coming up after a short ad break, we're going to be talking some more about the performance that saw City beat United. See you shortly.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Let Me Talk is sponsored by you, the listeners.
The best way to support the podcast is by subscribing via Memberful.
You can pay as little as £2 per month, which gives you early access to all our podcasts ad-free, and they're packed with even more content.
That gives you even more minutes of us to fill up your week.
Subscribing is really easy, and the longer episodes will integrate seamlessly with your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify or Apple. Head over to lmtpod.com for more information on signing up and links to all of our socials. Just a quick word on his defensive ability, Sam, because Guardiola mentioned it in there about how he's matured a bit. And I wondered, you know, how much of it came from simply the Crystal Palace game earlier in the season. Like he started when he started the season, and Southgate and Guardiola were both talking about not having Foden's, like Foden not having it for a central sort of role and the kind of like the awareness that he needs to have. Mm-hmm. Then that Crystal Palace game happens where he gives it away on the halfway line, and then I can't remember if they scored from that or if that was where he ended up giving the penalty away. But either way, it didn't go well. And it's almost as if he sort of needed that lived experience of what not to do to go, ah, right, yeah, I get it now.
Yeah, Guardiola talked about that after the Sheffield United game, maybe. You know, he said he kind of learned his lesson. And then after Bournemouth last week, he was saying, because the question was, you know, do you think something's clicked now he's gone in the middle? He was like, no, not the middle. He's just at the Club World Cup. He goes, at the Club World Cup, I noticed a change in him. And then again there, after the United game, when he mentioned, you know, the decisions he makes off the ball were good and sometimes they weren't always like that. Like, you could see, like, there was early on, because obviously United scored early, but before that, City had started really well. It was Walker too, but like Foden really good at like closing down teams in terms of, you know, these fast breaks that we've kind of talked about and I wrote about last week. And City are conceding 6 goals from 8 fast breaks, which is like the 19th like worst ranking in the league, the 6 goals, which is only above Palace. It's because, you know, these attacks kind of break down and they can't win the ball back, but they were on top of it today. And Foden, he really has progressed in that sense. And that's the kind of thing, isn't it? Because you get players all the time who are 16, 17, 18, who look amazing. Like I don't want to use Jack Wilshere purely because everyone uses Jack Wilshere when it's Foden, and they have done in the past when Foden maybe hasn't been progressing as hoped. But like, you can carry on playing and just have talent but never really deliver on it, not really be the guy. I mean, there was always a feeling, maybe it was harsh, this is a bit of a tangent, but there was always a feeling that Rooney never lived up to his potential, and Rooney won fucking everything.
Mm.
And Rooney was unreal, but like, he was kind of always held up to like Ronaldo standards because they obviously came through about the same time and Ronaldo just went to like several levels above. But like, there's always been that feeling, especially with English players, you need to really harness it and have that talent but make it truly special. And Foden could play for 15 years in the Premier League under a different manager and still have that natural ability. But if what we're seeing is him go into that God level kind of, this is all the stuff you've learned from Guardiola, then we're going to, you know, witness something special. We already are. But, you know, if we're talking now about he stepped up as the main man in this game, he bossed this game, got a hat-trick in this game, 2 goals in this game, where next?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He scored, I had a look at his record, he scored 6 goals in 7 games, which is obviously dominated by that hat-trick at Brentford. But like, it's a regular thing now that he's on the score sheet. It's not a nice added bonus as it was in previous
18
years.
18 goals.
Yeah, yeah.
18 goals.
Best goal scoring season.
No real like, oh yeah, but there was this. It's like solid goals in big games and, you know, Coupling the Club World Cup, if you wanted to say it wasn't as important or whatever, but like there's no like, oh yeah, he's got 6 goals in the Carabao Cup or whatever. These are like big, like, proper important goals in
smashing in equalisers in the Manchester Derby, mate. Yeah,
yeah. Well, again, like, it came at a good moment, that did. I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast or if we talked about it before we started recording, but there was a sense, wasn't there, that this goal kind of needs to come now. Like, overall, It's interesting because I feel like there was more of a sense of inevitability of City scoring in the first half than there was in the second. But Guardiola was saying they discovered the composure and the pause in the final third in the second half. And now it would be a hell of a heel turn for me to start saying, no, that can't be right. It's not about composure and pause. But I felt, and obviously I suppose he's thinking, in the first half, there was all the shots that were blocked. Obviously, there was a time when, there was once where Foden put a ball in, just he put a cross into Haaland, and Guardiola stood with his arms out by his side, like, what the hell are you doing? For about 10 seconds. And then when the ball went dead afterwards, he was shouting at Foden, like, just calm down. Like no, most people wouldn't bat an eye at putting a cross into the box, but Guardiola's like, don't put crosses into the box, particularly like that, like hopeful ones. Especially against a team who are good at counter-attacking.
Mm.
And he was asked at the end of the press conference, like, how do you stop counter-attacks? And he was like, don't lose stupid balls. And that would have been one example. And in the second half, the 2 quick throw-ins. The first one was Walker, which was just before. In fact, Walker tried to take a quick throw-in, threw it straight to United. They broke. That was when Walker chased back, he put his arm on Rashford and Rashford fell over, wasn't a foul in any meaning of the word. It just wasn't. And then City went down the other end and scored. So I suppose it worked out in the end. But like, it was those kind of rush moments which Guardiola didn't like, and he thought it was better in the second half. But yeah, I just felt like City were knocking at the door more, you know, to use a phrase everyone can relate to, in the first half. And in the second half, you know, when Foden did score, it felt a bit like they hadn't created much. And then, yeah, like I say, I did get the feeling in the second half after the sub, like, I'm not sure this has changed things for the better other than, you know, getting Doku off, which sounds harsh, but it needed to happen. So yeah, it did feel... I personally felt that by half time, you know, they were doing well. And, you know, Foden's equaliser, I don't think, maybe it was, I don't think it was because there was more composure in the final third. It was just one less body to block it. You know, they were trying to shoot from the edge of the box in the first half. Roger had a couple, De Bruyne had a couple, Foden probably did. I can't remember one, but I'm sure he probably did. They just got blocked.
Yeah, a couple of deflections, corners, that sort of thing.
So, like, yeah, obviously Guardiola made that distinction between the two halves, but I actually thought in the first half it was more likely that they were going to score, but obviously in the second half they did get the three.
I wonder if that feeling comes from the fact that they created a chance that had 0.93 expected goals from that Haaland managed to put over, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that kind of, when you've got one big identifiable chance, that can kind of dress up the others, and you can, like, what XG would they have put together apart from before Haaland's goals against Everton? Because they would have been winning on the XG then, but what do they really do against Everton at home?
Yeah.
Nothing, really. But it just felt like, you know, if it wasn't necessarily crosses, but it was kind of like passes into the box. Like, Doku did find, like, the feet of Bernardo or De Bruyne a couple of times. And De Bruyne, when he was on the right, he kind of pulled it back and it would get to Foden. Like, I felt like, even though I'm not talking about XG now, I'm talking about if you keep getting the ball to players like that in the box, surely one's going to go in. Surely. And it just felt like that. And there was more of that in the first half than there was in the second. But obviously, you know, for analysis' sake, Guardiola kind of made the distinction. And maybe their attacks were fewer and further between in the second half, but maybe they were of better quality because they were. And maybe Foden got extra space because they were pulling extra men out of position rather than in the first half when they were rushing it and United were just ready to block it. And they went, yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah. Just before we move on from Foden as well, Sam, I just wanted to flag this up as well because obviously you mentioned the sub there, Alvarez on for Doku. I quite like the link-up between Alvarez and Foden, and I'd not really realised that until they linked up for the second goal. And then I was kind of like, oh yeah, they actually do this a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a weird one. And I'm not just being contrary, which is obviously a strong suit, but like, we were saying earlier in the season, obviously, like, I want to see more from Alvarez and can't just be getting goals and assists if he does nothing else in the game, and he's a really good player, so he needs to show it and all that kind of stuff. So I was always on, you know, I was never like saying, oh, this guy's amazing at this position. But then the recent backlash against Alvarez, to the point where people are like, oh, it doesn't work and it's never worked, he's never been good in that position. I'm like, well, what was he doing earlier in the season then? Like, I know there was an element of him not being perfectly suited to it. He's never going to be De Bruyne. He's never going to be Gundogan. But he's not as bad as, it's you know, it's throwing the baby out with the bathwater territory. Like, it's not like he can never be used in that position. But, you know, if Bernardo's fit and De Bruyne's fit, then, yeah, put them in midfield instead. Fine. But, like, if Alvarez has to go on or has to play in there, it's not the end of the world. Like, he's not rubbish. But it's just a bit weird that over the last month or so, it was like everything that had come before was completely out the window. And I guess that ties into what you're saying there. Like, if you feel like there is good link-up play between them, like, it's like you can't say that these days. Like, everyone hates Alvarez now. So also, almost like when he came on, just after City had scored, I was like, when I tweet this, it's not going to be popular. And then, again, it feels like I felt bad for thinking after the goal, you know, for 20-odd minutes, I was like, has this change work? But it's like, because I'm already thinking from the point of view of what's Alvarez going to add down the middle? And then he didn't seem to add much. Like, it felt like his only touch was the assist. But yeah, like, him and Foden have played enough to link up quite well. But to be fair, there are also times when they're trying to flick it to each other and one of them miscontrols it and the other team counter-attack. So there is also that. I'd much rather have Bernardo and De Bruyne in there. and then Foden in some kind of combination.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, Alvarez isn't a... It's funny how he's gone from this guy's complete star boy to he should never play other than striker ever again, which is going to be like three games a season.
Yeah.
In reality.
Well, let's... you mentioned Doku. Let's turn our attention there because Ben's been in touch to say, Doku, I want him to be so good, but he's really struggling both with setting the pace and decision-making. It feels like Pep agrees, but he's still giving him the time. Alvarez sub changed the dynamic massively. And Luke's been in touch to say, was that Doku's last chance in a big game? Also, lots of people wanted Foden in the middle with Bernardo out wide, but how many times did he pick up a second ball when they had no way out? We'll come to Bernardo shortly, but Doku, like you said, Sammy, like he needed to come off. I did think that when I saw the team sheet, that I felt that it was a bold choice. And as good as City were in the first half, it didn't feel like it had particularly worked that well. And I wondered if maybe Kovacic should have been in the team instead. But that obviously then changes the setup and the dynamic. And maybe they don't. Maybe they're not as on the front foot as they were. I don't know.
Yeah, I've certainly haven't got the football brain to imagine how it might have been in that scenario. You know, broadly speaking, more control. But yeah, what does that mean in theory? Probably a good thing. But the thing is, with Doku starting, I did think same as you, like, not sure about that. But I was like, the team is so solid everywhere else.
Go on then.
It's not like he's certainly capable of having a good game because, you know, he was brilliant at the start of the season. But even if he doesn't, the rest of the team are there. So it's fine. But then, I mean, the rest of the team were there. They were great. And, you know, that message also touched on it in terms of the second balls and that kind of thing in particular. So he could play not brilliantly and it wasn't a major issue. But, yeah, in terms of it being last chance to play in a big game, I don't know if Guardiola thinks like that, but what I would say is... I wouldn't want to see him at Anfield. Like it's just that's just it. Now this is. I think he's reached the stage I thought he would be at the start of the season, which is this guy's very different to how City want to play. It's going to take him a year to bed in, like everyone else. We might not see much of him. And look, he's already outperformed those expectations months ago, but in the last 2 months, he's not done a lot. And fine, like is what it is. You know, I'm not going to defend Grealish for his first 18 months and then say Doku shit because I'm not, and I wouldn't. But yeah, certainly at this point of the season, it's just a real shame that Grealish isn't available right now because he would obviously be the guy going in. Even, you know, we'd have to say, look, Grealish, you've got to perform. But even if he's not fully performing, him being there, I don't know. It's no worse than Doku. You know, if Grealish just stands there and does nothing but tracks back, you're probably getting at least you're getting the tracking back element. So look, Doku's going to be really good for City, but it's just not happening for him at the minute. And in terms of is this his last chance? I don't know. Maybe he'll play against Arsenal. I'd be surprised if he started against Liverpool. But then what's Guardiola going to do? But then does that bear thinking about? I'm not sure it does.
I keep wondering.
There could be something really weird happening at Anfield. But I don't know.
Oh, don't. We got another show before then anyway. So let's kick that can down the road. I keep wondering with Doku if it's a little itch that Guardiola can't help but scratch at the moment, you know, in that he's almost like the little treat you can have. Like you've got all this...
Yeah, well, there's the danger, not the danger, there's the chance he creates something.
Yeah, that's what
like,
I mean.
It's like how he always keeps Haaland on, even when Haaland's not doing well. It's like, well, he might, if he gets a chance, he's probably going to take it, so let's keep him on. You know, that rope isn't quite as long with Doku. It's like, actually, no, he is playing rubbish. Let's get him off. But there is the big potential that he can just change the game by himself. But I would say it's probably been quite a while since that's happened. But I do understand why Guardiola would pick him in that sense, because there is that potential that he can just do something and change the game. But again, when you get inside and you cut onto your right foot, like he did at Luton, like he did against United, and it just goes into the crowd, you think, yeah, all right, just come back soon, mate. We'll sort it out next season.
Yeah. Although that one in the first half when everybody groaned, the worst shot was the De Bruyne volley.
Yeah, I genuinely thought that was going to make the second tier.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those where you think shots don't ever make the second tier. They don't ever get up there. But as that one was rising, I was like, oh, this one might do. But then, lo and behold, it didn't. And again, if that one didn't, then I'm not sure there's ever going to be a shot that will.
Edison definitely managed it in the, I can't remember what year it was, but they were doing a tour of the pitch after having won the league at one game. Might have been that Chelsea game last season, you know. And they were absolutely thwacking miniature footballs around and into the ground, into the crowd. And with one of the match balls, he just absolutely punted it, and it made the second tier behind me. So you get like it is possible, but like Edison had to drop it.
If you're trying to get it low and on a target. Speaking of which, I'm glad you reminded me. I didn't actually see this, but Dion Dublin did before the game. When Edison kind of puts the ball up and kind of sideways kicks it, and he just like drills it kind of the height of a goal, actually, like the height of a crossbar.
Yeah.
He was practicing one of them, and he smashed Mateus Nunes right in the chest with one, and it like proper took him out. he was down for ages. I wish I'd seen it.
Maybe that's why he wasn't more involved in the game. I don't know.
It seemed to, as you can imagine getting hit by one of them. The only thing worse than being hit by one of them is getting hit actually by Edison as he comes running out. The two worst things that can happen on a football pitch.
Yeah.
Christ, he tried it as well, didn't he?
Yeah, and he won the ball and everything, so.
Yeah, but just, do you remember just before that when he came out, kind of needlessly, and then he gave it to Ake under pressure, so Ake was like, well, I'm going to have to turn this guy and then buy a foul now to get out of this.
Yeah.
And then like 5 minutes later, he did win the ball. And again, from that goal kick, City went down the other end, put together, in fairness, a very patient attack there that was much more like City. That was much more like City, the second goal, for all the talk of composure and patience. There was once in the move, so it would have probably been about 30-odd passes, but De Bruyne tried to play a kind of reverse through ball to Foden making the run, and it got cut out, but it bounced off the United midfielder's shins, and he just won it back, and City carried on again. And then that's where the second goal did come from. So that was a lot more composure, to be fair. And that came from that goal kick, which I'm sure that would have been City's first goal kick of the game.
No, it can't.
With about 10 minutes left.
You keep saying this, it can't be. It can't have been. I just don't remember any others, so there we go.
But I mean, there was that stat. Was it United hadn't had a shot on target, or maybe a shot since like the 25th minute or something? Like when would these goal kicks have occurred?
I don't know.
There wasn't even balls down the channel that overran, really. In fact, I think there was one early on. It was when Rashford was at the back post and he kind of fell over just after he scored, and then he kind of headed it, which would have kept it in. But it did go out, so maybe there was one then as well. But anyway, like, yeah, he came just about flying out. I want to say flying out, but if Edison's still inside his box, and it's not a full flying out, is it? But Christ, that was close to being a disaster, really. Was that from another stupid throw-in? No, it wasn't.
I'm not sure if it was.
There was another stupid throw-in. De Bruyne tried to find Haaland. Haaland held it up and then lost it. And then United attacked, City won it back. But then United kept the ball and then ended up, they went back being patient to Onana, and Guardiola was just on the touchline. Like, what's going on? Like, what are you doing? Speaking of Guardiola on the touchline, we've all seen him on his hands and knees. He did it in the second half when Onana had the ball in his hands for a goal kick. Like, that's the most preemptive Guardiola hands and kneesing there's ever been. Like, it's not a set piece, it's not a counter-attack. It's literally just the goalkeeper stood there. Like, especially after what happened in the first half, obviously that's what spooked him. But they must be better set up for it now than then.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Most paranoid man on the planet, isn't he? No, that's the thing. There we go.
Yes. And that's why they're so good. And that's why he's so good.
That's the end of the free version of Let Me Talk. There is more if you are a member, though. Go to lmtpod.com if you want to sign up for those longer and ad-free episodes. What is in the members' show this week, Sam?
A lot, as ever. The extra special efforts of Ake, Diaz and Walker. Haaland's finishing. People complaining about injury time, which I thought was unusual, considering everyone had been previously complaining about all the time wasted. City fans scoring, which was basically Guardiola trying to be populist and failing. Foden G'ing the crowd up, and big game Bernardo being back.
That's all for members. Those ad-free episodes are longer and they're out earlier. You can find out more on lmtpod.com.
If you want to send us an email, it's hello@lmtpod.com. We're also on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, so just search for lmtpod on there.
Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.